course, the crowd wants Reed to go for it. Wouldn't be surprised if he did on fourth down and one.
So, anyways, with that, time jerks.
Welcome to fourth and one. It is Raiders week. I'm Ben Affleck, joined by Matt Damon, as always, your host for this Chief-centric podcast. If you don't follow us on Twitter, you won't get that joke, and shame on you. I'm actually Todd Palmer. This is actually Nick Jacobs. Nick,
they can't see you pointing at me, Todd.
Well, they can if they're watching on the OTT right here. See?
Okay, please stop. Please stop. You're invading my personal
space. Hey, man, like it's been a long week, and I'm happy to be just sitting here talking Chiefs football. After I finally closed my house, I know people have been very concerned about that.
I know my mom was concerned.
Your mom's a saint. My realtor's a saint. It was a 60-hour close. Anybody who's been through it knows how difficult that can be. And then we had to move everything in 30 hours. It's been a tough week, but I'm here to talk Chiefs. So let's light this candle.
Oh wow, we're taking my trademark phrases now. Is that what we're doing?
There you go. Yeah, yeah.
I think
I delivered it better. So
something I do want to say on the podcast after Todd's hurtful words right there about delivering stuff better—that's hurtful. I want to take time to thank each and every one of you that have downloaded the podcast over the past year. We hit a massive milestone with 100,000 downloads this week, so that's a big deal for Todd and I. We put in a lot of free time into making this podcast happen. Our goal was to always make it one of the more knowledgeable ones out there, one of the good breakdown ones, and one that gives you perspective that may not be out there and gives you as many vantage points as possible and keeps you informed and kind of has somewhat of a TV style with my background. So for us to be able to do that and for people to actually care other than my mom and my grandparents has been greatly appreciated. So continue to share it with all your friends and your Aunt Tilly if you have one. Even if you don't, share it with whoever else.
Yeah, dare I say, we aim to entertain. That's why I bring the jokes.
I mean, that's really more your goal, yes.
Yeah,
that's
it is.
More your goal.
Well, you know, I like to have fun. So here we go. Hey, man, like I said, it's Raiders week. First of all, let me just ask you, Monday night, I know both of us were watching at least parts of that game against Denver. Were you impressed with what you saw from the Raiders? I mean, especially defensively, you know, I mean, I think their defense was a little bit farther ahead than I expected it to be, maybe. And Josh Jacobs, he's a good running back, but we already knew that.
Defensively, I think a lot of how they looked out there was based on how bad that Denver offense is and how bad Joe Flacco is. I did not expect their
offense. That 2-minute drive was brutal to end the first half.
Pretty much everything Joe Flacco did was brutal in that game if it wasn't a play action pass with the middle of the field wide open.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Raiders, I mean, they're making strides on their defense. I don't want to take that away from them, but they aren't world beaters like the Broncos allow them to look.
Probably going to get a better test this weekend.
They will get a better test against the Chiefs offense this week. And also, the Raiders offense, I mean, they're where I guarantee Gruden wants them to be or where he'd hope to be.
Hey, Derek Carr looked like an above-average quarterback. Like, Dave, I mean, did I say David or Derek?
No, you said Derek.
Whichever Carr brother is playing for them.
Yeah, you were right the first time. I just liked how you said above average. Like,
well, look, I mean, I would have put him in the bottom third of quarterbacks in this league the last couple of years. I mean, you know, people forget, I think it was 2016, the Raiders were really good. He was playing really well, then he got that back fracture. And then 17 and 18, he was not the same player. And frankly, I thought he was in the bottom third. I wouldn't have put him in the top 20 starting quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, he might be mediocre now, which is better than he was.
Is that the new Drake remix? Started from the bottom, now we're above average.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, look, it's progress. It's in the right direction for him. And look, let's not pretend like this Chiefs secondary isn't vulnerable. And when you saw what Carr was able to do, you know, they may be able to present a few more problems because I think they can be balanced with Josh Jacobs. But you know what? It doesn't really matter what I think. Let's hear what Andy Reid thinks.
I think when you step in that stadium, when you're out there, you understand the rivalry. The guys that have been here, they get it. It's a long-standing rivalry, probably as close as you're going to have to a college atmosphere that way as far as rivalries go. And and then, likewise, when the Raiders come here, I think they realize that. So I think it's a neat, you know, it's a neat thing. Our fans feel it, and their fans feel it, and the players feel it. So.
That was Andy Reid talking about the atmosphere, the rivalry between the Raiders and the Chiefs. And look, I mean, going to the black hole there in Oakland is no joke. And it remains to be seen whether that same kind of atmosphere will translate into the palace they're having built in Las Vegas that they're going to be moving into next year. I think the franchise, look, the franchise is going to be more profitable now, but I think it's going to lose a little bit of something now that it's not going to be in L.A. or Oakland. And so we'll see how that affects the rivalry. But I just don't imagine that all the folks that are dressing up in all black with the spiked shoulder pads and have made the black hole what it is for so long, I don't see them all being in Las Vegas every week. So I think that this rivalry, this may be the last great chapter of this rivalry.
I think it all just depends on how much they gamble. I mean,
you know, maybe.
I'm just being honest here. Because, I mean, it's a great road trip. I mean, anytime you want to, you're like, hey, we're going to go see the Las Vegas Raiders and we'll go hit Caesar's Palace and turn it into a boys weekend. And, I mean, that's the whole purpose of why an NFL team is out in Vegas, because it allows for one of the fun trips. Could you imagine having Super Bowl week in Las Vegas?
No, that's great, but I don't want to go to Vegas 10 times in 4 months necessarily.
Well, I guess it just means you're not a dedicated fan.
I'm not, and I'm also not a degenerate gambler. So anyway, the big thing for the Chiefs right now, I think, is obviously injuries. You know, Patrick Mahomes, he played through the ankle injury. It looks like the Chiefs avoided catastrophe. You know, because if he goes down, we can, you know, let's just shut it all down. We'll start talking to you again in February. But Tyreek Hill obviously is going to be gone for a while. And rather than me try to get into explain it all, let's just have Rick Burkhalter, the head trainer for the Chiefs, explain Tyreek's injury and the timeline for his return.
Before we left Jacksonville, he had the dislocated sternoclavicular joint reduced. He had that reduced without surgery and had it reduced under anesthesia. So all went well there. There was no damage to any of his vital organs or his vessels. He spent the night in Jacksonville at the hospital. My assistant, David Glover, was with him. They flew back here Monday. he started the rehab process Monday night and is going through that now. He'll be monitored throughout this period where he goes through the phases of rehab like any other injury. We'll do some testing with him to make sure that that joint stays in the proper anatomical position. And I know there's speculation out there about how long, but he's truly a week-to-week injury. He will be listed as out this week. Thank you.
So that was Rick Burkhalter talking about. And so basically, for those who don't know, I mean, some of the medical terms there, dislocation means that the bone got popped out of where it's supposed to sit. And when they reduce it, it means that, In the case of what he said, they put him under anesthesia and then they popped it back into place. Which is actually the best case scenario, that they didn't have to do surgery to fix it.
Yeah, the fact that the bone wasn't broken is a great thing. Now, like he said, the biggest part that you kind of will have to keep tabs on is making sure that it grows back correctly where it's supposed to and has the right support system to it, and that it is sound and structure, because I mean, you know, you can't simulate hits, and you want to make sure that that's 100% good.
Yeah, and he said it's week to week. We've seen other reports that say probably likely 4 to 6 weeks. I don't know where you stand on this, but I don't care if it takes 8 weeks. I think the Chiefs will be able to weather the storm.
Yeah.
I would rather have a fully healthy Tyreek Hill in November, December, January than I would rush him back for even the Packers game in October. If he can get back for that, but like the Colts game, if he's not 100% healthy, I don't care. I mean,
right.
You know, going to the Colts game without him, I would much rather him be healthy and fully available down the stretch when the games are going to matter most for this football team than I would have him rush back.
Yeah, I just want him to be fully healthy in general, and for that structure to be sound and that joint to be sound. So that's, whatever that is, that's all I care about. I mean, you gotta play the long game with this. You're not like you're talking about you're this whole season is literally about going to Super Bowl and playing an AFC championship again.
Yeah.
So would you rather have Tyreek Hill for, like you said, their Colts game, or would you rather have him for a Super Bowl run?
Yeah.
You want the run.
For the Patriots in January. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's how you gotta decipher that one.
So, but obviously, he's going to be out this week. He's probably going to be out a few more weeks. who needs to step up? Who has to fill that void and be productive and allow this team to do the things that it needs to do to keep that offense humming?
Well, I know people are gonna point to Sammy Watkins and
sure,
say
yeah,
that
he had a huge game, yeah.
But I mean, he's the number one, so. The Raiders, I fully expect them to try to figure out ways to double team him or Kelce in specific downs and distance, and I don't think that they want to let those two get going. So, in my opinion, it's going to be more up to Mecole Hardman and DeMarcus Robinson. Yeah. Those are in D'Anthony Thomas. Those are the three they got to get figured out. And even LeSean McCoy, if they split them out, I mean, those and Blake Bell. I mean, those are the guys that are going to have to step up and fill that void and keep the chains moving overall.
I was going to say, I think that LeSean McCoy, I mean, given his receiving prowess, and we, look, we've seen Andy Reid, when he gets a back he trusts in the passing game. We saw what he did with Jamaal Charles out in space early in his time here in Kansas City. I mean, LeSean McCoy could be a guy that they use in that
Damian
position
Williams
a little bit, too.
Could be even more of that out yeah. in space, like Jamaal, because of the speed.
Yeah, so those guys, I think you're going to see some of that. We know it won't be Byron Pringle. Were you surprised that they released him?
No, I wasn't surprised that they waived him. I mean, I wasn't 100% sure if he'd clear waivers or not, because I didn't know if the Bears or the Colts or Eagles may want to add him to their roster. But luckily, he cleared the waivers, and the Chiefs were able to put him back on the practice squad with Thompson. So they have two viable options available if they do need to add some receiving threats.
And I actually think it's a brilliant move here, because you could have cut Tre'Mont Smith, but they like his speed, and he's not a guy, because he's played too much, that I don't think they could have put him on the practice squad at this point, even though he's only a second-year player. Byron Pringle, though, you know, this is a time of year when teams are just coming out of training camp, and they already had to cut everybody down to set their roster, so they're probably not really looking to swap out an unproven piece for somebody that's already been on their roster, already gone through the 6 weeks of training camp to get to this point in the season. So honestly, 6 weeks from now, when teams have had a chance to actually evaluate how their guys perform in games, and they may be, all right, this guy's not going to be able to do it. So 6 weeks from now, somebody might take a flyer on Byron Pringle and maybe try to sign him off off the Chiefs practice squad, something like that, if they like what they saw on tape from previous years. But this was probably a time of year where you were going to be able to sneak him through, and it worked out that way.
This time it did.
Yeah. All right, so you mentioned Sammy Watkins. Again, do you think that what he did last week is sustainable? Because we've been waiting for Sammy Watkins to show this kind of production. We've always known he had the potential to be a star player, and he's had some good seasons, but he's never been a number one guy. He's never been a dominant player out there. He was against Jacksonville. Was that a flash in the pan, or do you think that Sammy Watkins figured some stuff out in his fitness regimen over the summer, and is that he's a changed player? And not that you are going to expect 200 yards and three touchdowns every week, but can you expect him to be a true number one now?
That's the question that I think the Chiefs and them are trying to figure out right now. I don't think there's a definitive answer on that. I think they hope he can be that. I think they want him to be that, and I think he's got better speed than people anticipate now, and he's a little quicker in and out of his cuts. He's got a little bit more determination, and I mean, this is kind of a prove it year for him to continue to maybe get an extension or something of that nature.
Yeah, the Chiefs can get out of his contract. It's a 3-year deal, but after 2 years, they can get out without too much in dead money. So, I mean, this is kind of like a contract year for him. Yep. Let's hear what offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy had to say about Watkins and his performance and what to expect from him.
Obviously, Sammy's done a great job of taking care of his body. He works at it. Sammy's truly a professional. And just thinking about the progress that he's made just in the calendar year says a lot. I'm not surprised by the success that he had last week because of the way he works in practice. But I'm also expecting to see him do it on a week-to-week basis. I told him he didn't put it on tape. And what you put on tape is a direct reflection of who we are. So let's make sure that we continue.
Nick, he put it on tape. So
he did. Raiders are going to pay attention to it. So are the Ravens the following week.
Yeah. So, speaking of which, you kind of mentioned earlier that you expect the Raiders to either take away, to focus on Watkins and Kelce, especially.
One of the two, if not both.
Yeah. Especially with Tyreek out. So just, you've got to watch more film than I have this week because I still don't have internet at my house. What do you expect from this Raiders defense? Give us a quick scouting report.
The key parts is the Raiders can't stop the off-tackle runs right now. They're really struggling with that. They don't have guys that set the edge very well. So that's something that the Chiefs can exploit. The best way to do that is called a 4x1 set. So you have trips to the left side and the running back on that side, and then you have one receiver isolated or tight end or whoever split out wide on the other side, and you run your off tackle runs that way. And you do that.
Just kind of run counters and have the backside receiver. You can have them crack down if you want to for an extra blocker.
No, you want to leave the receiver out. You want the receivers to clear out. Yeah. So you want him further out there. If you do want to motion and have them try to take out that linebacker to the edge, if you think the corner doesn't like to tackle, you can try it. But the off tackle runs are there right now. And then the other biggest thing is, they're not very good at the misdirection jet sweeps, and the Chiefs ran that a lot last year, and they can still do it this year. The Broncos tried it very sloppily. They just tried to just have the tight end take a jet sweep, and I'm like, you gotta kind of set that up and misdirect them, because that's where they have the trouble. If you just do it point blank like that, I mean, they can handle it unless it's Mecole Hardman. Noah Fant's not Mecole Hardman, so it's just not going to work out. Raiders defense really struggles with trips, bunch formations, three receivers on the same side, overloading it. They really do struggle with that 3x1 set.
So. And their secondary is hurting a little bit because they, you know, Gary and Conley got hurt. He had to be carted off the field. Unclear whether he's going to play. Jonathan Abram, you know, has the shoulder. So, I mean, they may be a little bit depleted in that secondary too. So, you know, that should help with the Chiefs create a little more confusion with guys like Trayvon Mullen and some other guys, you know, young players in the secondary.
Yeah. So with the trips aspect of it, you can run the route combinations you want, and you can get it open just like they did against the Jaguars, and you can overload what you want to, and like I said, clear stuff out. So those are going to be really that can really help the Chiefs get their offense going overall. And I think if they do that, I think they can have a lot of fun. Like, they could have trips that way, and then have the back sneak out there and kind of their own variation of a halfback screen without ever really needing to pull. Just have the receivers clear it out in that regard. So I mean, there's so many things Andy and them can creatively do with it to where the Chiefs shouldn't have problems scoring points.
Yeah. All right, man. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the Chiefs' defense on this side of the split.
It's your time to shine. Join me every Sunday night for Sunday Sound Off, an interactive sports show where we put you in our starting lineup, answer questions, voice your opinion, sound off with our panel of experts.
Sunday Sound Off, sponsored by TDR Auto Plaza.
Safety, it's our number one concern for us, our family, and for those around us. But the violence all over the metro is not going away. At 41 Action News, we hope to change the conversation. That's why we started Safe KC, focusing on stories of hope, stories with positive impact, highlighting the people finding solutions to the problem. Because when that happens, we all win. Watch Safe KC, only on 41 Action News and KSHB.com.
In a city where anything can happen, you deserve the truth. We don't just report the stories. We find the stories, never backing down. Never shutting down. Getting the answers you deserve. This is our promise to you. Every day. Every night.
Stand by. 3, 2, 1.
41 Action News at 10. Clear, complete coverage. Gary Lezak and the 41 Action News weather team. Kansas City's most accurate.
I will say this, right now, Jacobs, I'm going to tell you what, I'm impressed by him. I think he's going to be one of those guys that as the season goes, people are going to stop talking about him.
Nick, I think people should already be talking about you.
I mean, it's such an honor. I didn't realize you listened to the 4th and 1 podcast.
No, but I agree. I mean, you know, last year we noticed that as the Chiefs, you know, their record got better and better. They got closer and closer to the playoffs and then into the playoffs. The number of downloads, the number of people who were interested in this podcast grew. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think a lot of that is because of your knowledge. So I'm glad that, I mean, Steve Spagnuolo is new to town, but he's already figured that out. So kudos to Spags.
I would love to pretend that he's talking about me that he listens to the 4th and 1 podcast, but we all know that's the running back Josh Jacobs. But I'm going to
I think he waits until the podcast comes out to set, like, you know, to decide what kind of game plan he's going
to
put together.
For them. I sure hope not, because they had to really go through the walkthroughs and their practices on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday about what they're going to attack.
Well,
I don't want them to be that far behind.
Well, I mean, it sounds to me, after hearing that sound bite, that that's exactly what he's doing. all right, you've got a chance to watch the film again. You know, we kind of coming out of it on Sunday when we were doing the podcast immediately afterwards without the benefit of having to watch it again. We kind of expected that they didn't do a lot of loops, didn't do a lot of stunts,
right.
Didn't, you know, we're fairly vanilla with their defensive line, and that was part of why they didn't get a lot of pressure. But overall, especially once they got the early lead, they didn't have to be. They did what they needed to get the win. Has that changed at all during the week now that you've had a chance to really study what they did?
Well, I mean, when I watched the coach's film, the first thing that jumped out to me is I didn't realize how much they rotated the defensive linemen. You just don't notice it in the moment, but whenever you watch the coach's film and you're like, that's not Frank Clark out there, that's Tano Passanio. That's Joey Ivey, you know, and they did a really good job rotating them. And I think that's why you saw the inconsistency, because I just don't feel like anybody could get in a groove pass rush wise. And part of that's, like I said, because of the heat, whenever we talked about it the other day.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I mean, how much do you think that has to do with just the heat, humidity? Mm-hmm. And they wanted to err on the side of caution and keeping guys fresh so they wouldn't be worn down in the fourth quarter against a running back like Fournette if it was a close game.
Yeah, and it seemed like they were pretty. After hearing the players talk throughout the week, seems like that was kind of their big focal point, was keeping Fournette in check. So they mission accomplished on that one.
Yeah,
so absolutely. I think they were okay with taking some of the paper cuts of the passes here and there. And if you look at Gardner Minshew's, you look at his passing chart, a lot of it's within 10 yards. There's not much deep. And I will say, whenever I watched the secondary and their coverages, Juan Thornhill stood out. I mean, the way that guy closed and everything that he was able to do was insane. Cornerback-wise, I mean, Ward had the hiccup, but he also should have had safety help from who I believe was Thornhill. It looked like a cover one, and I don't think Thornhill was there deep like he was supposed to be, but that's a guess on my part. I can't say definitively that's the case. That's what it looked like from the tape. But, I mean, in terms of the overall play in the secondary, I wasn't as discouraged as I was watching the game live. Because mentally, you get frustrated when you see paper cut, paper cut, paper cut, and you're like, come on, stop. Let's get a stop here. But when you watch it and you break it down play by play without emotion involved, you're like, oh, actually, coverage-wise, they were pretty sound compared to what, you know.
Well, and look, they tackle better. And when you've got
tackling was great.
And when you've got a big lead like that, the idea, you don't want to give them big plays that for big touchdowns that create momentum for them and give them, you know, 10 points. You want to make them earn anything they get and keep things in front of you. So part of that may just be, you know, hey, bend but don't break, you know, or at least make them take time to earn it. So, you know, that's the way of the world. Bottom line is, the defense played well enough to win, more than well enough to win, and they should get better from here. So all in all, I think you and I are probably still more encouraged than the average fan about what we saw. I know a lot of people out there are like, oh, same old defense, like, you know, I think there's a lot more to work with there, and I expect this defense to continue to get better as they build through the season, as long as they stay healthy. And I thought this, like, they're already better than they were in the playoffs in the New England game last year. And this is week one in a new scheme with new players, you know, and everything. So I think they're going to be okay. I really, really do. Now, they could prove me wrong, but I think they're going to be okay. And I think they'll be okay against the Raiders this week. But don't take my word for it. Let's hear from Steve Spagnuolo, Chris Jones, and Frank Clark about what they expect from the Raiders.
What are the keys? Look at tighter coverage. You know, talk all the time about these quarterbacks that get it out quick and complete it. And he looked really good the other night. If you can't affect him, you got to try to affect his targets. So somehow, some way, we got to do that early in the down or at the line of scrimmage. And 83 is a good tight end. He presents a problem. 16 is a good wideout. I mean, they got some weapons. I thought they played real efficient, real well, kind of the way I think Coach Gruden wants to play it. I was really impressed. I know everybody was.
You know, that's a lot of keys we got to look at. You know, they got Derek Carr, who looked excellent Monday night. You got Josh Jacobs, who is he's powerful, he's fast, he's elusive. And they got a good offensive line, and they got some guys at the wide receiver core who is pretty good. So take a couple looks at the film and see what Coach Spags come up with, and try to, you know, play fast and physical.
I feel like you got a revamped Raider team over there in Oakland. Played some excellent ball last week against Denver. You know, a great defense over there led by Von Miller. But, you know, Derek Carr, he did some great things out there. They got a young rookie running back who's running the ball pretty tough. I think he ran for over 150 yards or something like that. And they got some good talent over there. Got a big Trent Brown they brought in this offseason on the offensive line to help anchor, you know, that right side for Derek. And they're just playing good ball right now in the beginning of the season.
So that was some of the leaders of the Chiefs defense talking about what they expect. Obviously, like we talked about earlier, Derek Carr and Josh Jacobs served a little bit of notice, at least as much as you can early in the season like that.
Yeah, giving a scouting report on them, what Gruden and them are trying to do with Derek Carr is they want the ball out quick. Part of that was because the pass rusher they're facing. Part of that's because they're wanting to build his confidence back up and get him back to the level he was, like you said, before his injury.
Yeah, 2016.
So that's part of what they're trying to do right now. So they're giving him quick reads. They try to keep it, and honestly, they try to keep it at least to all the reads either in levels to where it's in the same area to where he can go 1-2-3 look or he can go 1-2 look. I know he's getting the ball out, if I remember correctly, less than 2.5 seconds in that first game. And he doesn't hold on to the ball as long as he has in prior years. So they want it out quick. And, I mean, they want to get it to Tyrell Williams or they want to get it to Darren Waller. And those are kind of their top two. Running back-wise with Josh Jacobs, what they're trying to do with the run game is they want to go north-south quick. They don't want to hesitate. They want to power run it just like the Ravens do. They don't want to go east-west. And when you do that, Josh Jacobs starts to kind of struggle a little bit more, and it wears them down a little bit more, and it's going to wear down that O-line because the O-line's built for power.
Yeah.
And they're not the finesse like the Chiefs are. Get out in space, do the screens, do that type of stuff. That's not them. That's not who they are. That's not their identity. So the Raiders want to stay balanced. They use the running game to kind of keep them in favorable down and distance so that Carr has – he can get second and five. He can get third and five, and it's not.
And then it makes the play action effective because it brings those safeties up. When we saw them beat Denver over the top on a couple of those balls to Tyrell Williams, just like you were talking about, you know, and that's their game. I mean, that's what they're going to do. Yeah. This is Tampa in the early 2000s. So
yeah. So with Carr, the other thing you have to be mindful of is with him getting the ball out quick, you either got to jump up in the passing lanes, or you have to collapse the pocket in on him with your interior rush and your interior pass. Because with the way they're getting the ball out, blitzes probably aren't going to work this week because it's going to leave a lot of voids open and they're going to attack those voids. So I think you're going to have a lot more zone coverage and you're going to have to disrupt the timing of the receivers to where Carr has to hold on the ball so the rush can collapse and get there. You just don't want to overwhelm on an overload to this side or that side because they'll pick it apart and this is probably not going to work out well. But, yeah, I think the key is obviously making them go east and west in the run and then making Carr hold on to the football, disrupt the timing, jump in the passing lanes. And I think Carr's the type of quarterback that if you hit him enough, he gets antsy and he starts throwing off his back foot and floating the football. So you want to get him to that point, but you're going to have to do all those things to get to that point.
Yeah. Let me ask you real quick. Zone coverage, you know, when they changed the rule from a 5-yard to a 1-yard cushion where you can make contact with the guys on the offensive, the offensive players as they come off the ball, how much do you think that hurt teams' ability? Because like you talk about, you want to play physical, you want to knock guys off routes if possible, but you're usually not jamming, you know, you don't have that cushion anymore where you can actually do that in a zone. So how much of a challenge is it going to be to find the right balance between those two things to make the game plan effective?
Well, the way you're going to have to work around that is you're going to have zones that they aren't expecting to where it looks like one thing, but it's another. And when you're like, all right, the slant route's going to be here because it looks like he's this guy's blitzing off that side, that's going to be the void. And then you have somebody, a safety, who jumps that. And then maybe that guy who looks like he's blitzing drops back. Then that's the hesitation. That's how you're going to disrupt the timing to where it may not be the press cushion, to where you're giving him looks that he's not, that he's expecting this to be available. And then he finds out at the moment, he's like, oh, okay, that wasn't available. And I just threw an interception. So Phillip Rivers had that experience this past week against the Colts when Malik Hooker made it look like it was open over the middle and Phillip threw in the end zone. He's like, we just closed this game out the dagger. And he's like, he just caught that one-handed and went the other way. Uh-oh. So, yeah, no, it's that's kind of the strategy in that regard.
All right. You mentioned the Chargers. Yeah, you mentioned the Colts. You mentioned Baltimore earlier when you were talking about the power run game. Yep. We've been talking about the Raiders, who are also 1-0. The Patriots just destroyed Pittsburgh on Sunday Night Football, which you could watch on 41 Action News if you had chosen to last week. And then, you know, this week again, we'll have Sunday Night Football. here on 41 Action News. Mm-hmm. Who are the best teams in the SEC right now?
Patriots are far and away obviously the best overall because they there's that defense and the coverage and what they're able to do right now is awesome. And the explosiveness they have on offense, they're picking up where they left off. I'm gonna be curious to see where their run game's at down the road here and how long Cannon's injury is for. So, but Patriots are number one.
Well, and they get to add Antonio Brown to that already explosive offense. So
we'll see how the things shake out over the.
Well, the one thing that we know is that he can play some football. Like he is arguably he's certainly one of the top three or four wide receivers in the league when he's out there playing as well as he can. I mean, you put him right up there with Julio Jones and DeAndre Hopkins, don't you?
We'll see what happens on the if he's able to see the field here in the coming weeks or not. So now there's that one. Now next one, in all honesty, I don't know who the number three team is right now in the NFL. I really don't.
Well, I mean, look, if you're basing it just off week one, I think you would say Baltimore, but you have to factor in that Baltimore was playing a JV team that may struggle to win the SEC West.
Yeah, I mean, because the Ravens, Lamar Jackson looked like a rock star because he had it looked like the Chiefs 0-2-0-3 offensive line where Trent Green had like 7 seconds to just wait for the route to open and for defenders to tire. So that's why Lamar was able to put up the points he did. I mean, the run game looked good with Ingram and everything, and the tight end, Andrews, had a big day because of it. But you're going to be
– Brown, too. Hollywood Brown went nuts.
Well, yeah, because they had 7 seconds for him to get open with safeties over top half the time. So,
but Miami's trash, so –
I mean, they had a bad day. Obviously the Raiders or Ravens are going to be in contention overall. I'm kind of curious to see what the Bills do in the coming weeks. The Titans went in and
they served notice, huh? I mean, everybody Cleveland's had all this hype all the offseason. They got housed by 30 against a Tennessee team that a lot of people had kind of soured on.
Here's Cleveland's problem, and this is why I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, and I think they proved it, is they're a football team that has Todd Haley's discipline with the Chiefs in 2009 to where there's not. Dorsey built a pretty bad offensive line for him there. And the offensive line the Browns used to have that kept him consistent doesn't exist anymore because it's either retired or it's been traded or it's gone other places. So they don't have that. So Baker, they can't pick up a blitz. And if I'm any team going forward, I'm bringing blitzes because I'm getting that ball out and Baker's not going to be happy if he's taking hits. And I think I'm not saying they're not explosive. Because they are, and they showed it on their opening drive in their first 15. They were explosive, did a really good job. Baker made some throws that you're like, man, he looks like Drew Brees right there with a little bit more zip on that ball. But there are the discipline gets the best of them in that second, third, and especially in the fourth quarter. And if you have a team that's very disciplined, that's when the distance is always going to be set. And I think Freddie Kitchens has really got his work cut out for him as a rookie head coach.
Yeah, but at least that was a more competitive game than Chiefs-Jaguars.
Oh, boy, that's a hot mic. But no, I mean, yeah, if I'm thinking about it right now, I mean, the Patriots would be one, the Chiefs would be two. You're expecting either the Steelers or Ravens to come out and be three at this point.
Maybe.
And then Texans, Colts. I think the Colts are the better team between them and the Texans.
Jacoby Brissett. I mean, look, they went into Los Angeles. Well, the Chargers may be in that mix for the third best team, too. But the Colts went in. That was an impressive, the way they came back and forced overtime. And ultimately, the Chargers still won. But, I still think the Chiefs are going to be in a fight in this division to win it.
Here's the problem with the Chargers. They need tackle help really, really bad. They need it really bad. Like if they can go trade for Trent Williams, do it because they need it. Their tackles are bad, and Rivers is as the season moves along, Rivers is going to get beat up if they have to keep going the road they're going right now. And having Melvin Gordon hurts them a little bit, and then depending how Mike Williams does in the coming weeks with his knee issue, and I mean Hunter Henry being injured and out, I'm not kidding when I say this. They are just a.
Yeah, Derwin James still out on the defense too. So
yeah, but I'm saying right now, I mean, if they lose their pass rush or if their offensive line play doesn't get better, I mean, there's a chance they don't even make the playoffs, and I'm not kidding it just from watching that.
Well, but I think if I'm hearing you right, early in the season, all we know for sure is that the Chiefs and Patriots have separated themselves.
For 1 week, yes, though they are clearly picking up where both of them left off in the AFC Championship game. And a lot of other teams are going to be soul-searching to get to that point.
You guys think about that while you listen to this break.
Forty-one. 41 Action Sports with Mick Schaefer. Clear, complete coverage.
Cutting the cable cord? 41 Action News is now on Roku. Search KSHB. Add our channel and you're set. All of our newscasts stream live. No other station in Kansas City can say that. Get clear, complete coverage on 41 Action News now on Roku.
It's your time to shine. Join me every Sunday night for Sunday Sound Off, an interactive sports show where we put you in our starting lineup, answer questions, voice your opinion, sound off with our panel of experts.
Sunday Sound Off, sponsored by TDR Auto Plaza.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined as always by Nick Jacobs. Or almost always by Nick Jacobs.
Yeah, it's called almost always. Sounds good.
Listen, man, there's been some, you know, some financial maneuverings this week. You know, they restructured a couple contracts. Do you think that portends a big move coming?
I know a lot of people have asked me about it this week, so that's what we're making our Check the Tweet segment, because I got a pulse on what people have been asking me in that regard, and I figured that would be most of the question.
Nick, is Patrick Peterson coming? Are they trading for Patrick Peterson, Nick?
I mean, here's the reality. There's still five games left in the suspension, so I don't think that's something right now, but in the middle of the year, we'll see where the secondary is at overall and if they need to make any adjustments and make any additions. Now, obviously, as people saw, Anthony Hitchens and Eric Fisher helped create a little bit over $10 million in cap space. And according to the NFLPA, the Chiefs' salary cap is $24 million under right now, so they have some room to work with. And what they essentially did is they took Eric Fisher's overall base salary in Hitchens, and they dropped him down to near vet minimum, and they took that and turned it into bonuses so it spreads over the life of what's left of their contract, so that they have some room to maneuver cap space-wise. Now, what they can do short-term if they want to, obviously they could add some additions to the secondary. Now, I know people...
Or quarterback if they wanted to.
That can't happen until next year, technically, unless you're signing a third-string quarterback I'm unaware of. Now, the second part of that is...
I'm just saying they could sign any position they want.
Technically, yes. Now, there's that aspect of it, and then... From there,
I just feel like you're singling out the secondary.
I feel like I keep trying to get back to my train of thought, and you keep interrupting to where I lose it.
I'm maybe doing that on purpose.
You keep taking the bookmarker that I have, and you keep ripping it out each time. Now, to get back to my thought, now they could do the carryover of cap space to help them financially next year to pay for Patrick Mahomes, but remain competitive in some other areas they want to attack. Or they can, and some people suggest, and using it for an extension with Chris Jones. I think you got to see how the year plays out with Chris Jones, and if you get a franchise tag him next year, franchise tag him. But I think right now you got to worry about what can help you get the secondary that you need to be able to compete against the Patriots and make a Super Bowl. So obviously the two big names that have been floated out there is obviously Minkah Fitzpatrick from the Dolphins that Chris Mortensen reported yesterday is potentially available in a trade. Or by yesterday, I mean on Thursday, if you're listening to this on a different day. And then, so they're obviously being shopped. Mortensen reportedly said it's for a potentially a first-round pick is what the Dolphins are asking for. I personally, I think the Dolphins would probably do it for a second. But if I'm in another organization, I'm trying lowballing for a four, see if we get to a three and meet at that spot. Because he obviously has four more controllable years after he's got three controllable years because it'd be the second year. So yeah, he's got this and three more controllable years that you can have him at a reasonable rate as a top 11 pick.
Well, and I mean theoretically, if the Chiefs do what we expect them to do this year, which is compete for a Super Bowl, make it back to an AFC Championship game at the very minimum, it's going to be a pick around 30. I mean, so that's essentially a second round pick in some respects when you're looking toward next year and maybe the year after.
Yep. And then now the other part that people are keep mentioning is Patrick Peterson potentially trading for that.
What?
Yeah, people keep thinking that that's going to be the difference, and it might be, but I don't think that that's something you're looking at this very moment with the suspension. We'll see what happens after that, and if the Cardinals are potentially interested in making a move. I personally, if I'm wanting to make a move for him, I'm trying to hold on to that second-round pick to potentially see if the Cardinals would go down from a first-round pick, which I think they're probably going to ask for and probably want something more along the second round. See if you can do a second and a pick in another year to see if that'll entice them to move on, because at that point the Cardinals should be decisively out of any contention or any race at that point. So we will see in that regard. Now, one little nugget I will throw in there for you, though, for all you conspiracy theorists out there who have captured my heart. No, I'm kidding. You probably haven't. It depends on what the conspiracy theory is. It's got to be football related for me to enjoy it. Joel Siegel is Eric Fisher's agent who helped move the money around. Joel Siegel is Kendall Fuller's agent on as a cornerback as well. Joel Siegel is the agent for Minka Fitzpatrick, who is looking for a trade. Joel Siegel is the agent for Patrick Peterson, who is also potentially one out at some point.
Available.
Potentially. So, I'm just saying money was moved around, and we will see where the money was made available to for the Chiefs to maneuver the cap however they see fit. And the guy represents multiple people.
If you had to pick one, what would your preference be if the Chiefs are going to make a move? Do you want him to extend Chris Jones? Do you want him to try to go out and do what it takes to get Minka or maybe Patrick Peterson? Which move do you think is most beneficial for the Chiefs? Because I have my opinion, but I want to hear yours first.
Corner. They got to go get help in
corner. But which one?
I don't care. I need corner help. And if you can figure out a way to get both of them, light that candle, do it. I don't even care. You got to do what you got to do to beat the Patriots, get to the Super Bowl. So make yourself as strong as possible. I don't even care if you got to get somebody off the street that could potentially do it. Whatever you got to do, whatever gets you the Super Bowl, make it happen. Make magic happen.
I just want Brett Veach to know, I will play corner for vet minimum.
Todd, I think you'd be cut after our practice when they saw that you couldn't.
That's okay.
when you couldn't corner turn and carry the receiver.
You've never seen. I have very fluid hips. You would be impressed with my tape. My recovery speed is excellent. I've got these long arms. As long as they don't run too fast, I would be okay.
is this tape based off the family Thanksgiving football game?
Well, yeah, it wasn't even really my family, but I dominated those 12-year-olds. I just want you to know.
Right, I know. Do we got anything else left there, Todd?
I think we just got to make some predictions, and then we can put this candle out.
You go first.
Look, I mean, I'm going to stick with what I predicted last week. Chiefs 79 nothing. No, I mean, after seeing this weekend, look, the Chiefs offense is who we thought they were. The defense is honestly about where I expect it to be too. I mean, I think the Chiefs are the better football team. I think they're going to go in there. I think they'll probably put up, let's say, 38 points. I think the defense will maybe give up a late score. I'm going to go ahead and say, let's say 38-27 Chiefs.
Okay. I'm going to go, I'm going to end up going 34-24 Chiefs. So we both get the Chiefs winning, moving to 2-0, and then facing Baltimore back at home.
And that'll be a good one. Hopefully and the nice thing is I know people for some reason talked about Jacksonville as a trap game, which didn't ever make a whole lot of sense to me. And I'm sure people will say, oh, the Raiders are a trap game because, Baltimore's coming in. Andy, if you listened to the beginning of the podcast and didn't skip to the end, you would have heard him talking about this rivalry. I don't think there's any way they overlook the Raiders, especially this early in the season, especially after how good they looked on Monday night.
No, especially with Steve Spagnuolo apparently showing the defense old Raiders-Chiefs rivalry video this week. That was a big topic of conversation.
So you guys go search those up on YouTube and get yourselves ready to say mean and angry things to the television on Sunday. And we will talk to you after the Chiefs, we presume, move to 2-0. Take care, guys.